Welcome in to another episode of Home Field Advantage. Hope you're all having a great week or weekend, whenever, however you may be listening or watching us across our great country or our great land. My name is Will Highland. It's October 25th, 2023. You're probably listening to this on our publishing date, which is October 26th, 2023. Either way, we're happy to have you joining us tonight. I've got a few things I want to talk about. I want to talk about a topic that has been something I've been asked about recently. Want to touch briefly on the Celtics. They're opening up tonight. And then I want to finish the show with a quick fun topic of conversation that's non-sports related. All right, where I'm going to begin, though, is news broke last night that Craig Breslow, a two-time World Series champion with the Boston Red Sox, and yes, he got a ring in 07, even though he did not pitch in the playoffs, but Craig Breslow, two-time World Series champion in 07 and 13 with the Red Sox, has been named president of baseball operations for the team, taking over the vacancy left by Chaim Bloom when Chaim Bloom was fired, and Breslow becomes the newest commander-in-chief, so to speak. I will get to more of that in a little bit. He becomes the first commander-in-chief, or the next, I should say, for the Boston Red Sox, and it's an exciting day. He was the guy that as soon as it was leaked that the Red Sox were going to be talking to Breslow, he was the guy that I had pinpointed that I was really interested in the Red Sox hiring. There's a multitude of reasons why. A lot of people are going to talk about the fact that he's a former player, the fact that he is Yale educated and is a really smart guy, the fact that he worked under Theo Epstein. All these things are good. I think he's young and energetic, and I think he brings a different energy to this role than those Sox have had in a while. And also, I think what's important is that he played here. Now, a lot of people will wonder, and I've heard it already, why does there have to be a connection? Does it matter that he played here? Does it matter that he went to Yale? Does it matter that he's from Connecticut? There's good answers and bad answers to that question. To me, it does matter that all of those things are true, and primarily that he played here, that he played for the Red Sox. And the reason being is that the Red Sox, there's three reasons, but the first reason is that the Red Sox have had an identity crisis. They have. For the last 4 years, they've not really had a direction. I've said that many times on this program. They've had no strategy. They've had no philosophy that was consistent with said strategy. They were trying to be a small market team with a big market payroll flexibility. They were trying to be this, that, and the other thing. And unfortunately, Chaim Bloom was the vehicle to a John Henry experiment that was failed from the beginning. That part, I think, is fair. So it's really easy to scapegoat Chaim Bloom, but I think anybody you put in that position was going to have a difficult time executing that strategy because, to be quite honest, there wasn't one. The Red Sox have been in an identity crisis, and they've been wandering in the wilderness with no rhyme or reason, for a few years now. That is why bringing in somebody who has won here, who has pitched here, you know, I know he wasn't a starting pitcher, he was a reliever, and I know that he played in Oakland and Minnesota and other places, but bringing in a guy that is familiar with Boston, that who was here in, like, the peak of the Red Sox powers in 07, and then also in sort of that renaissance 2013 year where they had the Boston Strong thing going on, they were at a bunch of great guys on the team. Like, he was a part of that. Craig Breslow was a part of that. He is as much a part of that as anybody else on that roster. If you think about it, he had a 2.45 ERA in 10 appearances in the 2013 postseason. All right. He was electric out of the pen. He was exactly what they needed to set up for Koji. You know, Koji gets, of course, all of the fame and fortune of being their closer and getting the final outs. And he was amazing that postseason. But a lot of times it was Junichi Tozawa and Craig Breslow who were there shoring up the game in the late innings, especially during the Tigers and Cardinals series in the later half of the either series. So it matters. It matters that Breslow played here because if the team is having an identity crisis and they need to find a new direction, you know, to bring them back to what they were, and the Red Sox desperately need to be brought back to what they were, which is a respectable franchise that that competes for the postseason every year. And an American League where practically half the league makes the playoffs, the Red Sox should be in that conversation, if not a lock every year, considering the payroll capability that they have and the tradition of winning that has occurred here in my lifetime. All right, so that's number one, is they're a team with an identity crisis that has to move forward, and having somebody who's been here and won and understands what the old Red Sox way was like will be a part of that. And look, another thing about that 2013 season is it was right after a abysmal 2012 season. And I know Breslow was here for both the bad and the good of that era. Look, they were not good in 14 or 15, and he was here then too. But the fact that he was there and understands what this team needs to be back in that position is paramount. The second thing is he learned from Theo Epstein. All right. So not only did he have a Red Sox connection of playing here, he learned the past four or five seasons in the front office under Theo Epstein at some points. And as soon as Bloom was fired, Epstein was the first name that 1,000 people were talking about. And so to have a guy who's learned from Theo, much like Charrington before him, I think Breslow brings sort of that school of thought to the Red Sox, which is we're going to develop pitching. We're going to develop young players. We're also going to go out and do what we need to do in this moment to win. And the Cubs had their World Series berth in 16, and you know, Breslow wasn't a part of that. He was still pitching. But make no mistake, being in a place like Chicago is a lot like Boston. And learning from a guy like Theo, I think, prepares him for the executive part of being in Boston, right? Like, they worked together for a few years. They definitely had conversations about Boston, right? So that helps even more. And on top of all of this stuff, right, his acumen, the fact that he played, the fact that he's really smart, it's all right there. It's all right there in front of you. And then the last point that I'd make is look at the other teams in town. Cam Neely and Don Sweeney have run the Bruins for, the past years and change. As soon as Neely took over as president of the team, they were a Stanley Cup contender and pretty much have been ever since. And Don Sweeney took over a Chiarelli disaster. And while Sweeney hasn't been the best drafter at all times, and I've given him a lot of flack on the show for that, the Bruins have been a perennial contender year in, year out, because those guys know what it takes to win here. They know what the tradition is like here. They're not just somebody who rolled off the street and was thrown into a job that they weren't ready for. I think that matters. And same thing with Danny Ainge, right? Danny Ainge ran the Celtics for all those years. He knows what it's like, right? He played here. He understands. So I would just point to that and say, yes, it matters that he has executive experience. They weren't able to get somebody at the top, right? It had to be somebody who had New England roots because, let's face it, the Sox are known to not stick on to guys if they don't succeed. And so the fact that he had New England roots means that he's familiar enough with the area where he's not too concerned about jumping into a role with something that he doesn't know. He knows the Sox. He's been here. So that matters. It matters that he's smart. It matters that has played before. And it matters that the other teams, there's a blueprint in Boston. This works. It works. It just works. And who knows? With Craig Breslow, it may not work. But at least, hopefully now, you have a direction in the franchise where there's actually a strategy. The strategy is get back to being the Boston Red Sox. That's my hope for Craig Breslow. If they don't deliver a World Series win in 5 years, but they're making the ALCS and making the ALDS and winning a few divisions, then it's going to be hard to fire the guy and not give him another chance until they do win that World Series, right? Like, the problem with Bloom is they set him up to do a rebuild, and then they realized they didn't want to do a rebuild, and he was your rebuild guy. The Red Sox just don't have the patience for that, and the fans don't have the patience for that. But I think the fans will understand, because it is so hard to win in baseball, and the Astros and the Braves and the Phillies are sort of anomalies. If the Sox are getting back to the ALCS, but they're not getting over the hump, they'll be okay, because, I mean, just look at the Yankees, right? Like, the Yankees have just as much of a standard as winning as we do, and they've stuck with Brian Cashman all these years despite all those failures, because they know, I mean, other than this year, they were going to the ALCS every year. They were having superstars. They were being competitive. They were fielding a legitimate team. The problem is the Red Sox, for a few years now, haven't had a complete roster, and I hope Breslow can deal with that. All right, so that's my outlook on Craig Breslow. I think it matters that he played here. I think it matters that he has New England connections and roots. I think it matters that he learned from a guy like Theo Epstein. And more importantly, I think it matters that Red Sox fans give him the same leash we gave Chaim Bloom, right? And maybe leash is the wrong term, but, you know, leeway, I guess. Like, show him a little bit of patience, but understand that the Red Sox need to go out, and I think this is the directive, they need to go out and win. They need to go out and win. And if it's not an immediate World Series, but they're making the ALCS or the Division Series or competing, you know, for being a top wild card participant or a division winner, then I think we should continue to let the string, you know, go and see if Craig Breslow can deliver this franchise a World Series. What's interesting is 2011, the fall, they hired Ben Cherington. Within 2 years, he had won them a championship. And then in 2015, they hired Dave Dombrowski, and they went on to immediately win three consecutive AL East titles and then a World Series title in Dombrowski's third full year. So they have had immediate success with other GMs. It just wasn't materializing with Bloom because they just didn't have a strategy. My hope is that hiring Breslow can help them solve this identity crisis and get back to being the Boston Red Sox. All right, speaking of a Boston team that had an identity crisis, real quick. Seems like the Celtics have completely overhauled themselves and are going to be a juggernaut. Now, I could be drinking the green Kool-Aid, but as much as I like Marcus Smart and all the other role players that they had, I think bringing, you know, Brogdon included, I think bringing in Porzingis, all right, and Drew Holiday is going to make all the difference. I really do, in terms of this team having a little bit of an it factor, right? Like, I think Brown and Tatum are your guys. I'm not sure about the Tatum contract. We'll find out about that. But I think the fact that those guys now have other, I would say, legitimate guys around them. I mean, no disrespect to Al Horford or Brogdon or Marcus Smart, but I do think Drew Holiday and Porzingis are a slight step above those guys. And it's going to matter, right? It's going to matter for Joe Mazzulla to have those guys to rely on. So I think Drew Holiday, as I mentioned, when the trade happened, I think he brings a little bit of toughness to this team. A lot of what you saw from Smart. And look, I'm not a huge basketball guy, so I can't tell you all the X's and O's of what he's going to bring, but just from an intrinsic factor, like I'm reading about the Celtics team. Talk about a team with a lot of expectations to win, right? That's the Celtics. It's going to be finals or bust. It's going to be that way every year that Brown and Tatum are on this roster. And Brad Stevens knows that, and Mazzulla knows that. And hopefully this year, they can avoid some of the pitfalls that happened a year ago when they were dealing with the Ime Udoka sex scandal and the constant distractions as a result of that, and everything else that went along with some of the drama from last year. I think if they're able to navigate that and assimilate as a team and really play as a team, the sky's the limit for the Boston Celtics. It's just a matter of, are they going to put it all together, stay healthy, and avoid some of the drama of years past? All right. Last but not least tonight, going to be another quick short show. And speaking of years past, I want to give you my five most underrated presidents of the United States. Now, before you guys are like, this is out of left field, Will, what the hell are you doing? Friends and I like to bring the group chat to life. I like to expand the family. When you're in this podcast as a listener or as an audience member on YouTube, you are part of the family. You're part of the Sportlane USA family. You're part of the Odd Man Rush family. You're part of the Home Field Advantage family, all of the above. And my friends and I, we discuss things that I think are stuff that you would like as a listener. And we were talking about our five favorite presidents. And this is hard because, like, my favorite presidents end up being like the best ones, right? Because there's sort of like a confirmation bias in history that, like, you learn to love the presidents that history books reflect well on, which usually means that they're the best in some cases. That's maybe a topic for another show. But like Abraham Lincoln and George Washington and Ronald Reagan or, you know, Thomas Jefferson or whatever, JFK, FDR, like, those are sort of run-of-the-mill favorite presidents because they happen to be the best. What I like to talk about is sort of the fifth wall, you know, or the third rung, sort of the underrated presidents. And I think our history is filled with many underrated presidents, many overrated presidents for sure. That could be a segment for a future show, but I think that would result in probably me pissing some people off. But I'm going to stick with the underrated presidents because there's been 46 of them, right? Like, and in fact, there's actually been 45 because Grover Cleveland was elected twice. So there's been 45 people to hold the office. And as I said, we focus a lot on like sort of the best. And there's Abraham Lincoln's probably the best president, George Washington and Abraham Lincoln together. You could make an argument for either one. Same thing, you know, a lot of people talk about Jefferson or Andrew Jackson is very controversial, or JFK or Ronald Reagan or whomever, or FDR. Here are my five most underrated presidents, and they're not in a particular order. Rather, I'm going to go in chronological order. The first is James Madison. James Madison pretty much is the father of American government. And what I mean by that is Washington was made president because he was a leader and was born to be a leader. And then Adams was made president because Adams was with Washington's group and Adams was the vice president and sort of seen as a successor. And they hadn't quite figured out that that this wasn't really a succession sort of democracy, right? We were a republic based on, getting elected didn't matter if you were a vice president or not. So, I mean, like, not to say John Adams was a bad president. I don't really know a ton about him, but I'm just saying that, like, for the first few presidents, were elected because of things that they had done and not things that they had like thought of. And they weren't really visionaries, I guess is what I'm saying. Thomas Jefferson was a visionary, but Thomas Jefferson was also like part of the Declaration of Independence / the First Continental Congress. He was there at all these other things. Like he was sort of waiting in the wings. The first guy All right, the first guy, in my opinion, to ever be elected president because of what he was knew he was bringing to the table was James Madison. All right, James Madison is the father of American government. He wrote the Federalist Papers, all right, along with I believe John Jay, and was it John Jay? Oh no. Okay. I'm going to mess up my I gotta Google this. But Federalist Papers. I'm pretty sure it was John Jay. John Jay, Alexander Hamilton, and James Madison. Okay. So, taking in what I said about the first few guys being elected president because of who they were, not what they were, is still true. Madison, though, Madison is elected because he's a thinker, because he's a pragmatist, and because he basically has a grip on what is needed to be a commander in chief of a new country, right? Like, what I mean by a new country is James Madison wasn't elected really because he was like a charismatic dude or whatever. He was elected because he was smart, he was a tactician, all right? And he understood that a new country needed certain things in order to function. The Federalist Papers clearly lined out the role of government, right? A government built upon layers. A government that was not too strong and not too weak in certain particular areas. That's what Madison came up with. He wanted a government where that no man need be afraid of another. And if that sounds familiar, then go watch National Treasure 2. But in all honesty, that's why he's an underrated president. He came up with things like the Bill of Rights. How many times in government do people mention the Bill of Rights? The First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, the Tenth Amendment, the first 10 amendments? That was Madison that came up with that. But for some reason, people talk about him about those two things, but they forget that in his time, he was not as famous as the first three guys. He wasn't. I would argue he's the fourth most famous and he was the fourth president. But unlike the other three, he was a president that understood a new country, right? Not that the other guys didn't understand what was needed for a new republic, but Madison knew that the future of the country needed certain things to happen from a legal and governmental point of view, and not many people of his era understood that. He was one of them. All right. Second most underrated president. We're going to jump forward about 140 years, 150 years, actually, mean to U.S. Grant. And the reason why I'm choosing Ulysses S. Grant is because Ulysses S. Grant has a really interesting life. He started out in the army in the Mexican-American War and then sort of fell off the face of the earth. Like he ended up in California. He married somebody who was from the South, and he was obviously away from her because he was serving the army in California. He got really drunk. He resigned from the army. He had to swallow his pride and go and work for his father's leather company back in Ohio. U.S. Grant was, in all means, a failure. Then the Civil War happened, and he ascended through the ranks, became a general because of his heroism in Shiloh and Vicksburg, both battles on the Western Front that set up the Union Army for success. And President Lincoln saw this potential and appointed Grant to lead all of the Union armies. He led the Union Army to victory overall in the Civil War, presided over Lee's surrender, in which Maine's Joshua Chamberlain was there as well, and then sort of became a leading figure in politics because Abraham Lincoln, one of his only flaws as president was appointing Andrew Johnson to be his second vice president. Andrew Johnson was somebody who was from the South. Maine's Hannibal Hamlin had been relieved of that duty, and Lincoln was trying to get favor among Southerners. And so what happened is, when Lincoln was assassinated, Andrew Johnson took over and was really, now, I wouldn't say a Southern sympathizer, that would be way too strong, but he was somebody who just wasn't as strong against things like abolition or the reunification or some of these things as Grant was. Grant came in and was immediately a favorite to be the Republican nominee in 1868. He wins that election. He achieves several things throughout his presidency. There were some financial scandals that plagued his presidency, but the fact that he helped lead the way for the 15th Amendment, which granted everybody, I believe that was the one that granted everybody the right to vote. He really was beginning on the Reconstruction aspect of it all. And he was somebody who brokered peace with the Native Americans. And he was just someone who, of his time, was looked at as a really strong leader. And he became, at that moment, if you had asked people in 1868 or in 1872, when he won re-election, who the best president in American history was, a lot of Americans would point to Lincoln and Washington, but recency bias aside, they may have said U.S. Grant. And he's on our $50 bill for a reason. It's not just because he was a stalwart Union general. It's because he helped rebuild the country. And it's because he did extraordinary things to help heal the country. And if I may, if you're not bored already, I want to read you a quote from Frederick Douglass on U.S. Grant. Let's see, Frederick Douglass quote on U.S. Grant. I want to make sure I get it right. He wrote, okay. At the eulogy for U.S. Grant, Frederick Douglass said, "A man too broad for prejudice, too humane to despise the humblest, too great to be small at any point, in him African Americans found a protector, the Native Americans a friend, and a vanquished foe a brother, and an imperiled nation a savior." That's what Frederick Douglass said about U.S. Grant. And I think he's incredibly underrated in American history. All right, third is Calvin Coolidge. Calvin Coolidge is known mostly for being nicknamed Silent Cal and for being a sort of uninspiring president in modern terms. But of his era, Calvin Coolidge got government working. He made government efficient. And he started out in really humble means. He was a young farm boy from Vermont, made his way to Massachusetts, got involved in local politics, ascended through the ranks at the state party level, became a vice presidential candidate under Warren G. Harding, and when Harding died, was elected or named president. As a result of that, he was also sworn in as president in his family home, using his family Bible on the spot. And I believe it was his father, who was a lawyer or a judge, who presided over it. So Calvin Coolidge had an amazing ascent to the presidency, not to mention the fact that while he was governor of Massachusetts, there was the police strike, and he basically ended and fired them all. You know, at least 60 years before Ronald Reagan fired the air traffic controllers, Calvin Coolidge fired police officers. And I think Calvin Coolidge, much like Grant, is sort of uncelebrated because they weren't like modern figureheads, right? Like Calvin Coolidge, much like Grant, helped with voting rights, helped with Native American reconciliation. He was really good on the economy and business, and he wasn't a celebrity figure, right? Like, he wasn't your modern president. He didn't do things for the flash. He was all business, and he was a tactician. And so, much like Grant and Madison, he remains underrated because he's not celebrated, because he was not a celebratory figure in his own right. On a similar note, Harry Truman, fast forward about 30 years, Harry Truman also had to take over an impossible spot. FDR passed away right after the beginning of 1945. And by the way, FDR had been president at this point for over 10 years. And so he was a beloved figure in many parts of the country because of the way that he was able to handle World War II in the aftermath of Pearl Harbor. So Harry Truman was put in a really hard spot. Now, I'm not going to pretend to be a scholar of Harry Truman, but I will say, if you just think about that alone and what he had to do and the decisions he had to make, including the decision to drop the atomic bomb on Japan, including the decisions that happened post-World War II as a result of European Reconstruction, it really was Harry Truman that was put in a really tough spot, and he succeeded. And similarly, Dwight D. Eisenhower is very, very underrated. And Dwight D. Eisenhower immediately succeeded Harry Truman in the 1950s leading up to 1960. And he was, you know, so popular. Think about this, if this were to happen nowadays. Think about a figure so popular that both political parties want him to run for them. That doesn't happen in 2023, right? You know, that doesn't happen. But that's how popular Dwight D. Eisenhower was when he first entered the political scene. And then as president during the 1950s, he was somebody who led with conviction. He wasn't an overly divisive figure in a very divisive time leading into a very divisive decade. And Ike was somebody who knew how to lead from experience being a general. And he did things in our country that we just memory hole and forget even happened, such as the interstate system, right? I guarantee one of you listening to this podcast has driven on an interstate today. That interstate system was designed by the Eisenhower administration and is like one of the things that America has that no other country has, is a robust, fast-moving auto system that is interconnected and designed for ultimate efficiency. That's what Eisenhower came up with. And lastly, with Ike, a lot of people talk about his farewell address and his warning of the military-industrial complex. One other thing I'll point out with Dwight Eisenhower is that he also warned of the medical-industrial complex. And without getting too political here, you can think about the past few years and what has gone on and some of the concerns that have been raised about Big Pharma. He warned about the scientific community influencing public policy and being a political arm. And if anything has been the downfall of public discourse the past few years, it has been the blurring of science and politics. And this is something that Dwight Eisenhower warned about, but we didn't heed. And so just as we would look at the military-industrial complex and the warnings that are associated with that, we should also look at some of the other things that he stood up for, which is the blurring of science and politics and industry. All right. I hope you all made it through that and did not fall asleep. I hope you enjoyed it. Maybe you learned something. I hope I presented factual accounts of these five presidents. So feel free to fact check me and let me know if I missed anything or was incorrect. I don't believe so. I think I tried to stick with what I knew and I didn't try to libertize too much with their biographies. But It is something to think about, right? We talk about underrated sports figures and all of that, but in some ways, American politics and history is a competitive sport, and these guys were able to ascend to its highest position and, in my opinion, succeed there. None of them were perfect, but as John Adams said, if men were angels, then we wouldn't need government. And as Ben Franklin said, we can keep our republic is a great one, but only if we can keep it. So I hope we can all walk forward with maybe a little bit more knowledge as a result of what these gentlemen brought to the country. And on that note, I hope you guys can walk away from this podcast with a little bit of more sports knowledge as it pertains to the Craig Breslow hiring. Not saying he's going to be as pragmatic as the leader of James Madison, but if he even brings a fraction to the Red Sox of what those guys brought to America, then I think the Boston baseball team will be on a more successful track. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Home Field Advantage. If you watched us on YouTube and you enjoyed it, please subscribe below and leave a comment if you have an opinion on anything that was shared tonight. Same thing with our podcast feed. You can subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, Google, and Stitcher. You can also follow us on social at Home Field Pod. If you enjoy the rest of your week, and I hope you enjoy this program. But until next time, my name is Will Hyland, and you've been listening to Home Field Advantage. If you liked this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite provider, including Spotify, Apple, Google, and Stitcher. Be sure to also check us out 2 times a week on those platforms, on Monday and on Thursday. All of the Sportland USA programs are independent, and the opinions expressed in them do not reflect those of any other company, outlet, person, or entity.